The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent. And don't forget while you're here to also subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel. Let's get into it. Fun Tuesday night in the sport. Former Baylor assistant Jerome Tang improved to 3-0 against Baylor. Penn State upset Wisconsin. Purdue played the fourth best team in Indiana on the road and beat them by 21. We're going to get to all of that eventually. But I did want to start in Knoxville, where Dalton Connect is on some kind of heater after scoring 28 points last Wednesday at Mississippi State and 36 more Saturday at Georgia. The fifth-year transfer from Northern Colorado finished with a career-high 39 points in Tuesday's 85-66 win over Florida. He was 13-23 from the field, made four of the six three-pointers he attempted. He is now averaging 34.3 points in his past three outings. Dead leg. What if I told you a dynamic score on the wing was all Rick Barnes needed to turn a physical, defensive-minded basketball team into a good enough offensive team to maybe make a run at a Final Four? Would you buy that?
I would not. Not yet. We'll save the March stuff with Tennessee once we get to March, but I'm not there yet that Dalton Connect can be the skeleton key to unlock Rick Barnes's inconsistency when it gets to March. But let's meet here to celebrate Dalton Connect, because he is as not as put on. If you're watching on YouTube, hello, do smash that like button, subscribe if you haven't already, and tell you know what, if you got a friend that loves college hoops and you think they might need this podcast in their life, let them know about the show if you could for us. Thank you so much.
Yeah, call them right now. Call them right now.
Well, you know what, if you're listening to the show, pause the podcast, shoot a text, phone call right now. Then we'll talk to you here.
I think the better way to do it would be right now, FaceTime somebody.
Yeah.
And when they answer, just take your phone and put it right on your computer and show them.
Okay.
Just force them to watch it. Don't ask them if they'd like to. Make them FaceTime somebody right now.
The problem with that is if you force someone to do that, either they're actually technically not subscribing to the YouTube channel. So I would request that you send a link, you know, send on a link, maybe get a little more proactive on that.
I never said there wasn't a flaw in my strategy. I never said I didn't have flaws in my strategy.
On your video screen right now, is Dalton Connect a first team All-American? I would say yes. As coincidence would have it, our dribble handoff, our weekly Wednesday feature, normally on Wednesday, sometimes Parrish forgets and we run it on Thursday.
Well,
our weekly Wednesday. Have you, by the way, you filled that in yet or no?
I don't even know what the topic is.
Exactly.
I have no idea. What is the topic?
So I'm about to inform Parrish on our workflow here. The topic this week is if you remove Zach Edey, who would be your pick right now to be most likely to win National Player of the Year? Dalton Connect is not my submission. RJ Davis of UNC is my submission. But Dalton Connect would be, in my opinion, on the first team All-American list at this stage, particularly coming off the run that he's coming off, because he did have a little bit of a lull. But right now, as we speak this morning, Dalton Connect averaging 18.5 points, shooting 41.7% from three. He had a career best 39 points on Tuesday night. It was just Florida. Gators haven't yet won on the road this season. Todd Golden can't really get it going just quite yet in year two. That's another topic altogether. But Connect now has become the first Tennessee Volunteer since Allen Houston in 1990 to have consecutive games of 35 or more points. And even before that, he had 28. So in his last three games, Dalton Connect, the Colorado Connection, 34.3 points, shooting 57% from the field, 56.5% from three-point range, averaging six rebounds, and has hit 20 of his 24 foul shots. So he is the key for Tennessee to be in that top five discussion overall. Tennessee has now won 9 of its past 10. It did have that three-game losing streak to good competition. The only loss, respectable one, on the road against Mississippi State that just happened last weekend there. So credit to Connect. And he, as I said this, I did an HQ hit late on Tuesday night. He is the most impactful transfer in the sport right now. I would take him to be more impactful than Hunter Dickinson personally at this stage of the season. And he is the latest, but perhaps biggest example in this nascent NIL portal era that we have here that will give hope to any high major program that that thinks they might be able to find a gem at the low major ranks, and to give any low major player that let's be clear here, is established. Dalton Connect was a good player in the Big Sky at Northern Colorado, but he wasn't an absolute all-star. He was second team all-league last season, but it gives hope that in the years to come, someone else could be a Dalton Connect. Obviously, that will be attempted and will not come to fruition many, many times over, but he proves that there are really, really good players out there that are capable. He is a grad student as well, so it's not like, you know, he didn't go to Northern Colorado for a year. He started outside the D1 structure, okay? Junior college, then to Northern Colorado, then finds a perfect home for himself at Tennessee, and he has really changed the dynamic of UT this season, one of the better players in the country.
David Jones wants me to ask you if you're sure Dalton Connect is even the best transfer in the state of Tennessee.
I would say, right now, give me Connect. If you watch the way that Connect plays and what he does for Tennessee's offense, I would say it is Connect.
To revisit a conversation we've had previously, do you know where Dalton Connect was in David Cobb's transfer rankings?
I'm sure he wasn't ranked at all.
Oh, well, he was ranked. He was ranked at all. He was 47th. So would you rather have the 47th best transfer or the 47th best high school prospect? I know which one I'd like.
Well, when it comes to this specifically, yes. But there's a chance you could find the 52nd race transfer and the 52nd high school prospect, and the high school prospect might be having a better season. Just
yeah,
as
well, I don't have time to look that up.
That's called selective data, that's all.
Yeah, well, I like selective data.
I know.
I don't know if you've been paying attention.
I'm aware.
But I enjoy selective data. Now, Connect, his path to stardom, and I think we have reached stardom level, right? Yeah, I think you do this for a top five team.
Yeah, and in terms of college basketball, it is stardom.
Right.
Within our universe, I think that's fair.
So he was only 6'1" when he graduated high school. All right. And he enrolls in junior college, Northeastern Junior College. And while there, he apparently grows 5 inches. We should all be so lucky. This dude grew 5 inches while I was in junior college. I ain't grown since eighth grade. I've looked exactly like this since eighth grade.
Well, that's not true. You had hair. I have the pictures to prove it.
No, I've always
you did looked not like look this. Like this as yes, a freshman in high school.
No. I did too. I have looked like this my whole life. I haven't grown since eighth grade. This dude went to college and grew 5 inches. So he becomes a first team junior college All-American and ends up at Northern Colorado. He's in his home state. Leads the Big Sky in scoring as a senior. And then don't ever forget, the only reason this dude's still playing college basketball is because of COVID.
Yeah.
He's played 4 full seasons of college basketball before he ever got to Knoxville. But he decides to use his 5th year, his COVID year. And
well, he's a grad transfer too, so he still could have done this, I believe. Because he graduated from Northern Colorado, so he still would have been able to be a graduate student and eligible to play. I don't know if COVID is...
No, you can't play a 5th year without COVID.
As a grad student, I think you could. I think you could.
I would rather not argue this live, but okay. I
could be wrong. I could be wrong on this. Maybe I'm having selective data here, but I thought, okay, I could be wrong on that.
Like, let me
point regardless.
Yeah. I believe, I'll look at the numbers real quick. He played two full years of junior college and then two full years of 30 plus games at Northern Colorado. This is his fifth year of actually playing basketball at the collegiate level. I believe that's a byproduct of the COVID year. Either way, he ends up in Knoxville. And as we talked about Tuesday night on Inside College Basketball, you know, Tennessee has had some habits that have traveled from one season to the next under Rick Barnes. I think that's one of the signs of a coach who has really established a culture is that, the pieces are going to change year to year, but are there some things you can rely on? Like, hey, that's Tennessee basketball. This is something they do. Well, we know they're going to be physical with you. We know they're going to really guard you, and both those things were true last season. They're both true this season. One of the best defensive teams in the country. They're going to beat you up a little bit. What the issue was last season, particularly after Zakai Ziegler went down, was that when they needed to go get a bucket, like who do you dump the ball off to? Like, with all due respect, Santiago Vescovi maybe doesn't need to be the best player on a championship contending team. But he was reduced. He was asked to maybe be that. At last season at Tennessee, and that, or at least one of them, and that proved difficult. They just got into situations sometimes where, hey, you need to, you're on the wrong end of a 10-0 run. Can you stop it? Hey, you're down eight on the verge of going down double digits. Can you get a bucket to stop this? They didn't know where to go with it. Well, Dalton Connect solves all that. I mean, you can just get, like, he's a guy you can, he's got size on the wing. He's athletic. You know, I don't know if he'll test off the charts at the combine, but he's not a stereotype. You know, he's 6'6". He's got a long arms. He's athletic.
I would define him as an elastic college basketball player.
Yeah.
Like he moves on the floor. Yeah.
I was in studio with Wally Zerbiak Tuesday night. Wally was like, he shoots it. He's got long arms and he shoots it. You know, he's got a high release. He's starting to show up on mock drafts and starting to get real NBA draft attention, and that makes sense to me. He looks the part.
He does, and if they had not, we're not going to go too deep onto what would have happened if they didn't get him. But if they didn't, it's interesting. Like, Tennessee would still be a good team, but if they didn't bring him aboard, it would be a markedly different team. But now, Volunteers at 13-4, just the one loss, as I mentioned, since the end of November. And defensively, you know, they're holding up. And granted, you know, Georgia, we'll see. Georgia did get a win on Tuesday night, but they won at Georgia. They get the home win over Florida in the bumped up tip time because of the storms there in Tennessee on Tuesday. They have not played a surefire tournament team in more than a month, but whatever. They're going to have more opportunities here. And to this point, if you're a Tennessee fan, like you're pretty damn satisfied with where you're at. Universally projected top 10 team, no matter the ranking or metric that you're looking at. Defensively, really, really good again. And offensively, as Parrish mentioned, like coming along pretty well. Like, this group is the second, right now it is pacing to be the second best offensive team that Barnes has had. The only one that was better was that tremendous team with Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield. They lost him. I was there in Louisville during the 19 tournament. It was the 18-19 group. They lost in the Sweet 16 to Purdue in overtime. That's the only team, shouts to Jordan Bone, that was better offensively than this one. And this one's not going to probably reach that. I can't see this one being better than that one. That was a pretty damn good team overall. Was a 2 seed. This group could well be a 2 seed as well if they can come out on top. But yeah, Konecta, he's a real fun story. And there was, you know, at least I wondered, okay, he had a hot start. Is he maybe going to settle here into being like a really quality starter, but not necessarily, you know, one of the four best players in the SEC? Well, he has responded so with so much authority in the past three games after, you know, having really like a near 3 week stretch where he was down, but against Florida, Georgia, in Mississippi State, 28 plus points in all of them, getting it done on the boards to a certain extent, at least what he's asked to, and continues to play a decent percentage of minutes here as well, or at least he has as of late. He was not playing as much previously from a minutes perspective. Don't quite know why that was. Some of these were bye games, so I get it, they're blowouts, but as long as they can lean on him and he continues to have that knack for hitting a big shot, I mean, he just when the ball flies off his hand from deep, whether he's open coming off the curl, pulling up off the dribble, if he's covered, there's just a certain amount of confidence I think Tennessee fans now have that it's not going in every time, but he's shooting 41.7%, and a decent percentage of those are contested shots, and he's been a revelation for the Vols.
I went to Tennessee's official athletic website on Tuesday night. I was looking for something else, but stumbled into the Vols store where you could order a Dalton Connect jersey for $150. You could order the Tennessee Dalton Connect jersey.
$150.
You ready for this? Out of stock.
Wow. Yeah, look at that.
He's like Knoxville's Lionel Messi. He's like the Lionel Messi of Knoxville. You can't get a jersey.
Yeah, how about that? $150, by the way. For listen, I hope he's taking home the majority of those profits because, well, he should. But $150 for a college player's jersey? That seems a little steep. If you asked me to guess blindly how much a Dalton Connect jersey was going for, I would have said $99 right there. Yeah.
Jerseys, man. Jerseys ain't no joke. You walk into a team store at an NBA arena, they ain't no joke.
Yeah. If I want to walk in and get a Desmond Bain jersey at FedEx Forum right now, is that running me more than $200 right now?
I don't know if it's more than 200, but it's going to be somewhere between one and two. It's like $150. I don't know that would be out of the ordinary. That's about what you're looking at. Jerseys, man.
I'm looking. Jersey. We can get a word from our partners after this, whatever, but I'm going to look up a Desmond Bane jersey.
Yeah, you look up a Desmond Bane jersey. We'll whip around the country next, talk about what else we need to know from Tuesday night. But first, for $150, we will get one word from our partners.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Got Nick in the chat. He says he got an adult Ja Morant jersey recently. $150. That's what it cost.
Yeah, I'm on the store here, grizzlystore.com. I'm sure you're quite familiar with it. Although it's Fanatics, so that's a different deal altogether. This isn't going to give me. I want to know if I'm walking in the building, in the team store at FedEx Forum. You should have this information offhand, to be honest.
I don't own a jersey.
You're in the building, buddy, all the time. You don't take a little drive-by there?
No, I go in there when my wife texts me and says, can you get Oliver a Jaren Jackson shirt? And that's when I go in there. But other than that, I don't get to that part of the building too often.
All right, you want to whip around what we had in the sport here on Tuesday night?
Yeah, whip around. Whip me around.
There we go. A little kinky. Let's start on Seton Hall. All right. St. John's didn't have Patino, had COVID. Hopefully he's on the mend. I don't know if I know of a coach that has caught COVID and missed games more often than Patino. So seriously, like Rick, please, I hope you're doing okay here. Seton Hall went on a 28-0 run in this game, Parrish. they destroyed St. John's, and in doing so, maintained a tie in the loss column atop the Big East standings. Seton Hall is now 13-5 overall, 6-1 in the league. UConn is 5-1. We'll get to their game. They're playing on Wednesday night. We'll get to that later in the show here. St. John's, which was once 4-1, has now dropped 2 in a row at Creighton, at Seton Hall. Now it's got to get right this weekend, try to at home against Marquette. But let's talk Pirates, man. They have lost once since December 9th. It was at Xavier. And are the surprise team in the Big East this season. Shaheen Holloway's team was picked 9th in the preseason. Alamir Dawes and Kaderi Richmond, a couple of grizzled vets who are coming through huge. I mean, I've watched some or all of Seton Hall's for their past 5 games. The Butler game over the weekend, St. John's last night, and then I watched their Providence game and the loss against Xavier. Those two are ready for any and all oncoming traffic. They've been tremendous this season, and credit to Shaheen Holloway for thriving again in an underdog role. But as I said on HQ on Tuesday night, this is the Big East. This team is no longer going to take a single opposing coaching staff or team by surprise. Just not going to happen. You get to 6-1. You have 3 road wins in the conference, by the way, to this point. They are headed to the NCAA tournament. Not a guarantee to get there because in the non-conference, they didn't do a ton. But man, oh man, Parrish, Seton Hall is making it up for it big time in the Big East. And we thought it could be Providence as a surprise team. We thought it could be Butler as the surprise team. It is definitively those Pirates out of South Orange.
6-1 alone atop the Big East standings. 4-3 in quadrant 1, 1-1 in quadrant 2, 5-4 in the first 2 quadrants. They do have a quadrant 3 loss at home to Rutgers. That resume, just the way I framed it, is like borderline top 25-1. It doesn't have to be in there. But when you start to factor in strength of recent performances and just acknowledge that they're on a 5-game winning streak, 3 of those 5 wins are quadrant 1 wins, and they're again alone atop the Big East standings as of this moment. I did put Seton Hall in the top 25-1 on Wednesday morning. Shaheen Holloway doing a nice job at his alma mater. I just sort of looked at the top AP poll. Earlier today, we got a lot of guys doing good stuff at their alma maters right now.
What do we got?
Number 2, Purdue, is coached by alum Matt Painter. Number 4, North Carolina, is coached by alum Hubert Davis. Number 7, Duke, is coached by alum John Shire. Number 10, Memphis, is coached by alum Penny Hardaway. Number 19, TCU, is coached by alum Jamie Dixon. Number 21, Dayton, coached by alum Anthony Grant. And Seton Hall, which is probably just a win this weekend away from entering the AP poll, is coached by alum Shaheen Holloway.
That's good stuff.
You always hope these types of things will work out, and they don't always. Patrick Ewing and Georgetown, an example of that. But 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams in the top 25 AP poll right now are coached by men who graduated from those schools.
And I would expect that Seton Hall is going to hit. It'll have at least one skid in there. I mean, next two are Creighton at home, Providence at home, so it's set up here to hopefully continue inflating its record, but. It's got a road game against Marquette later this month. It does get the fortune here of dodging any kind of 3-game road stand. It's in the midst of a 3-game home stand, and getting enough done here in the early part of the schedule. If you really look at the back end, just to really look down the way at how they're going to finish the regular season, it's home Butler, at Creighton, at UConn, home Nova, home DePaul. So there's some tough ones in there, but you wrap up at home against Nova and then DePaul there. I think Seton Hall is going to be in the tournament. I don't think they're going to win the league. Now, they are tied for first right now. I think water will find its level to a certain degree. But congrats to the Pirates on definitely exceeding expectations at this point. More work to be done, but that's a really cool story. Elsewhere on Tuesday night in college hoops, this is just a quick mention for me. Purdue wins at Indiana. It wasn't close. Indiana kind of flirted with making it semi, maybe interesting in the second half, but whatever. 87-66. Edie goes for 33 points and 14 rebounds, just further establishing his dominance over the player of the year race. And for Indiana, It is, you know, it is just a lost season, unfortunately. It is now, I actually didn't check it this morning, but it was in the 90s of many a metric here. The Hoosiers as of Wednesday morning here.
Oh, buddy, you know I got it.
I know you got it, but let me do it. 94th at KenPom right now, and we almost have all preseason priors factored out. We got another week or so before it's all in season data. 12-6. Doesn't have a good, it doesn't have a good non-con win. I can't call Maryland at home a good one there. And you know, what do you want? Weirdly, like Xavier Johnson has not been good. I thought he would be way better. They got into foul trouble last night. I got nothing on Purdue, Indiana, but if you have something.
No, I don't have to. It speaks for itself. I don't have to get any jokes off. Kansas went into Indiana and like needed to really rally late to steal a victory at Assembly Hall. That is also one of the best teams in the country. And Purdue just went in there and handled them from start to finish. Indiana made a little run at some point to kind of make it interesting in the second half, but then Purdue stretched it right back out and wins by 21. It did occur to me, like, as we're going, ooh, Dalton Connect. Oh, wow. It's like Edie got 33 and 14. Like, he does. He has normalized these ridiculous games. You know, when somebody else goes like 33 and 14, it's like, oh, wow. And with Edie, it's just like, yeah, 33 and 14.
Of course. You are absolutely right about this. And maybe we shouldn't be so numb to it. But that 33 and 14 for anyone not named Edie, it is a like, should we leave the podcast with this? With Edie, it's literally just another game.
Right.
Guys, it's not close. He's running away with player of the year. Like, knock on wood, if he stays healthy, there's just Purdue's going to be in the top five. Like, there's just not going to be competition for this. He's going to be the first person since Sampson to win the Naismith in back-to-back years.
And just for the record, I do not mind that UConn is number one in the AP poll. I understand it. They were the highest-ranked team last week that did not lose last week. I get it. But Purdue is 6-2 in quadrant one and 11-2 in the first two quadrants after last night's win. They lead the nation in quadrant one wins. They lead the nation in wins inside the first two quadrants. They could add a seventh quadrant one win this weekend at Iowa. Regardless of who's ranked number one in the AP poll, Purdue right now has the nation's best body of work. If the selection committee were evaluating teams as of this moment, I'm confident they would make Purdue the number one overall seed.
I agree with that. And for the Purdue fans listening, I do know the game meant a lot after last season when Indiana swept Purdue. And so you get back there. I'm sure for that staff and that roster, it does mean a lot as well. Let's talk Kansas State because it wins in overtime at home against Baylor. Gives Baylor its first loss in league play. The only undefeated team in the Big 12 now is Texas Tech, which has a game. We'll get to this in later in the show, but they've got a game on Wednesday night. We'll see if they can get out of the next 24 hours without a scratch in league play. It's going to be a big ask. Baylor probably should have had this game, but K-State made a huge rally at the end of regulation, and then they really flipped it when Arthur Kaluma hit a top of the key three, and he was fouled. It was a four-point play, turned a two-point deficit into a two-point advantage there. No real shame whatsoever, obviously, at all, and Baylor going on the road at what looked to be, and it was an interesting Tuesday night for a couple of reasons there, but from a television standpoint, the game that, to me, that looked like just the most fun building to be in was Bramlage, and good on K-State for getting its first quad one win of the season. Now it might have, and I can't retroactively go back and check. I don't know if when it beat Providence, that was technically we didn't have the net rankings out there. So like, we don't know, but that's definitely not a quad one right now. They won over Villanova at home. It's not a quad one, not close. They have a road win against LSU. Doesn't register as a quad one win. So the Baylor win, it got until mid-January. That is aberrational for a Big 12 team, and one that is, you know, probably tracking toward getting into the tournament, to wait this long to get a Q1 victory. Easy for me to say. Here's the other deal, though. Saw Rothstein tweet this. I didn't realize it till he did. Dude, Kansas State has
sleeps
gone.
In May. You didn't realize he sleeps in May? I knew. I've known that for years.
I'm well aware of that bit. Kansas State is 10-0 in overtime games under Jerome Tang, and they're 5-0 this season. The odds of that are absurd. Only Florida State's like 17-0 in its past 17 overtime games. But that's incredible there. They have OT wins this season over Providence, Oral Roberts, North Alabama, Villanova, and now Baylor. It's because of these close shaves that Kansas State, 13-4 record, 3-1 in the Big 12, well outside the top 40 in many a predictive ranking. But good win for Jerome Tang. a nice victory for the Wildcats. We'll see if they can start building a tournament resume. They've got a tough schedule upcoming, so I think that win will prove to have been necessary in retrospect.
I mean, yeah, 10-0 in overtime is a nice record, but like, why can't you get your work done in regulation, Jerome Tang? You know,
you come here to drag Jerome. All right.
Can I get a 14 minute read and a court report about why Kansas State can't win in 40 minutes?
You cannot. And no, you will not.
No, it's awesome. It's awesome. Like, he's changed the entire culture of that program. He's now 3-0 against Baylor, his former employer. And Kansas State, like, it is true, last night got its first quadrant one win. But if you start just framing bodies of work, one of the things they did well in the non-league, like, they didn't, you know, they're pretty low in the computers. They are probably projected. I don't know. I'll just keep it simple and factual. They're pretty low in the computers, but they're 1-1 in quadrant one and 3-3 in quadrant two. So 4-4 in the first two quadrants with no additional losses. So they don't have any quad three bad stuff or quad four bad stuff. And like we've talked about before, if you don't damage your resume severely in the non-league, and Kansas State didn't, if you then go 500 in the Big 12, that history says that's good enough. Every team that's gone 500 in the Big 12 since 2015 has made the NCAA tournament, except for the year 2020, where we didn't have an NCAA tournament. It's the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. Kansas State's now 3-1 in the Big 12. All right. So they're on their way to hitting that finish line, if we are calling that the finish line. And what's interesting is that they have an advantageous league schedule. In the Big 12, we no longer have a true round robin, right? Because there's too many teams for that. So everybody, like, we have unbalanced schedules in the Big 12. Well, Kansas State gets to play Oklahoma State twice and West Virginia twice. Those are the two worst programs in the Big 12. Kansas State only has to play Houston once. All right. So how about this? The maximum number of games you can play in the Big 12 against sub 75 teams in the net in your league, the maximum number is 6. And that would mean if you got 2 against West Virginia, 2 against Oklahoma State, and 2 against Central Florida, then you would get to play 6 games against sub 75 net teams. That's the max you could get. Yeah. Kansas State gets 5. They get Oklahoma State twice, West Virginia twice, and Central Florida once. So the schedule, as much as anything else, is going to give them a shot to finish 500 in the Big 12. And if they do that, finish at least 500 in the Big 12, they're going to go dancing for the second straight year under Jerome Tang.
Two edges to that sword, though, and I know you know this, but just for our listeners so they don't get confused, obviously your league record has zero impact on whether you get in or how you get
Right. I'm just saying it is a fact.
I know you know. I'm just saying for our listeners.
To clarify,
yes,
being 500 in the Big 12 doesn't guarantee admission. I'm just saying, every year since 2015, every team that's finished 500 in the Big 12 has made the tournament when we had a tournament.
Yes, and league record is completely irrelevant when it comes to inclusion or seeding, but those things have correlated. Also, though, by nature of having so many of those games outside top 75 competition, K-State's obviously going to have to get it done against the quad one games, because it could be an interesting situation if it gets into the tournament with a high loss total, where it winds up getting seeded. Sticking in the Big 12 real quickly, I truly don't have an issue with this. I just got a chuckle out of it. Cincinnati beat TCU in another overtime game in the Big 12. TCU ranked 19th. It was the second top 25 win for Cincinnati this season. Wes Miller is trying to really build something there. And then the fans just decided, what the hell, we're gonna flood the floor. So to Cincinnati fans out there, you know what? Go ahead, have yourself a ball. But it is TCU. And it's not like you just got your first rank win of even this season. It's not like TCU is a top 10 team or a top 5 team. It's 19th overall. And I know Xavier fans are having, Xavier got a good home win on Wednesday. It's a little bit of an up and down season for Sean Miller's group there. And so I think for the X-Men and the X-Women, they got a little bit of a schadenfreude over Cincinnati's fans. Just deciding, what the hell, we're here, let's get out there. TCU GP courts. I honestly, is it the first time TCU has ever been court stormed in the history of the program?
That might be. Like, has TCU ever watched a court get stormed against them? It might.
I don't think so.
They've come a long way. I don't mind it. Like, Cincinnati, I'm so jealous of Cincinnati. as a Memphis graduate.
Okay.
Like, I was raised on the Metro, and then after the Metro, I was raised on the Great Midwest Conference. I grew up with Cincinnati. And to watch them get to host Big 12 games now while Memphis is hosting UT San Antonio, it just makes me sick. I hate watching them have so much fun. Central Florida, too. Like, I watched Central Florida storm the court last week against Kansas. Memphis was in overtime against UT San Antonio. I was like, what is happening?
You are tapping into a vein there for the entire Tigers fan base. That is not, it's not an accurate Cincinnati. Good win by you. Interesting team. See how they shake out in a, and obviously a very intriguing Big 12. I'll also note, NC State 5-1 in the ACC for the first time since 88-89. It won 83-76 over Wake Forest. We got the double. Just a weird night in college. We got the double. Okay, so how about this? So I got the YouTube TV quad box going on the TV, and then I got I guess at that point I don't remember if Peacock still had Purdue Indiana going around, but I had multiple viewing situations. So I'm watching the end of NC State Wake, and DJ Horn goes to the line and he flips a double bird. And at the time, like, I see it and I'm like, did I see what I just saw? I was like, there's, because I almost tweeted. I was like, did I just see an NC State player just double bird? But I didn't tweet it. I was like, there's no way I saw that. I'm not going to put that out there. And people are going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? No, lo and behold, DJ Horn went to the line and shot up a double bird. And whether it was at the officials or the fans, he was at home. So I don't think there was a Wake Forest contingent behind the basket. And then he tweeted his apologies after. Young man, you do not need to do that. I don't know whether since he's storming the floor after beating Texas Christian University or DJ Horn going double bird was the funniest moment of the night, but is 1A, 1B as far as I'm concerned.
No, well, the funniest is the double bird. And I don't need a double bird where you're like caught up in the moment and it's just like, yeah. I like how casual and cool it was. It was like it was so good. Yes, it was so good. I loved it. Never apologize for being hilarious. You should never have to apologize for being hilarious.
Completely agree. That was a brutally officiated game. Kevin Keats got tossed. Jeff Anderson wanted nothing to do with it. There were multiple ejections. Hunter Salas got ejected, amongst others. So, yeah, it was a weird game. NC State 5-1, though, in the league for the first time since 88-89. Wolfpack, good on you. Let's go to the Mountain West. New Mexico got another quad one win. And, you know, a good one at home against Utah State. So helping the Mountain West case there. But Boise State got dropped at home by UNLV. That was a CBS Sports Network game. 22-game home win streak. That was the longest in the country. It's now over for the Broncos. And so just, you know, it's a knock for them. So good for the Mountain West, I think, for New Mexico to continue to get the win. Boise State to lose, and man, that game just took forever. But those were the doings there.
You ain't got to tell me.
I know you were in studio. I was thinking about you. I was like, there were a couple instances last night where, like, I at one point I got up to like go brush my teeth because I was like, there were like three or four games over the course of like an hour 20 where the reviews were like elongating each of these games by an extra 10 to 15 minutes. I was like, This is a pox on the sport. Like, what are we doing here, man? So I was thinking about that Vegas Boise State game. Like, come on already. Last thing I got for you, Samford won. Again, 16 straight wins for Bucky Ball. Bucky McMillan's team won 75-71 at Western Carolina. That could well be your SoCon championship title game preview. Those have been the two best teams in the SoCon this season. Good on Samford to win its 16th in a row. And let me check this. I believe it was, it might've been Sicko's committee that tweeted this out. Someone tweeted it out and hit my timeline. Samford has never rated ahead of, oh, here we are, Wednesday morning. Samford has apparently never rated ahead of Stanford in the history of KenPom. Oh. And here we are Wednesday morning. Stanford is 80. Samford is 81. Stanford at 9-7. The Cardinal 80th at KenPom. Samford at 16-2, right behind. We are on the cusp of history, my friend. Samford, one of the best mid-majors in the country. And maybe, I was telling you earlier this season, you know, maybe James Madison could be this year's Florida Atlantic. No, man, Samford is that team right now. They are getting it done. And congrats to them, because it's been a good while since they've had a huge season of note like this.
Indiana's 94.
I know. Samford has officially passed Indiana in the rankings, although I don't think this was the first time. But yes, yes. And that's your Tuesday night in college hoops.
Norlander led his court report with a conversation he had with Tom Izzo. We'll get into that next. But first, one more word from our partners.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right, Deadleg, you spent, I gather, 40 minutes on the phone with Tom Izzo. You led the court report on that. I read it. Breezed right through it, no problem.
There we go.
What'd you learn from your conversation with Tom Izzo?
I gave him a call on Monday, just kind of checked in, got to talk. We got to talking about a lot. As is often the case, and this is a good problem to have, Izzo, you know, the conversation was over and most of it was on the record. He asked to go off the record just a couple of times there. But at the end of it, I'm like, I've got too much stuff. Tom, you gave me too much. So should Michigan State veer back into top 25 territory? I can use some of that stuff down the road, but that was not subject to the court report. The court report was about this. His good friend Nick Saban just retired in semi-shocking fashion, obviously, and they got into the business together basically at the same time when they were, you know, young pups at Michigan State in the 80s. This is before they became head coaches at Michigan State in the same year, in 1995. So we talked a little bit about Saban. There's some stuff in there. And then in the midst of talking about what Michigan State's been this season and some of the struggles, I did ask if he, you know, had been considering retiring. Would he put it as a possibility that he would retire in 2024? And he said, no, absolutely not. And to hear him, and, you know, we'll link this in the episode description so you can read it, but he does not intend on retiring anytime soon. He did say that when he does retire, he very much sees him going out like Jay Wright and Nick Saban. And by that being, all right, maybe the day of or the day before, you know, he didn't say this explicitly. This is me reading into it. Like, maybe it leaks out 24 hours before we actually get the word. But he is not going to have a farewell tour. He doesn't want something to even be known, you know, a month plus. So Tom, you are on the hook. If you retire in April, I'm coming for your ass, because you told me on the record it won't be happening. But he does have that capacity if he wants it. But he's got Jace Richardson, highly ranked prospect coming in next year, son of Jason Richardson, of course. And it was interesting to hear Izzo, who is always willing, and I do so very much appreciate this, he's willing to be on the record about so many issues that piss him off. And so once again, he went into the problems that he has when it comes to college athletics. He's not anti-name, image, and likeness. He's not players transferring. He's benefited from transfers. He gets all that. It just doesn't sit well with him, this idea that across the sport, there are too many players who are transferring, where he doesn't believe that should be the case. On a player-by-player basis, you know, that's a different thing than when you scan and you used to see, you know, 2,000 players hopping into the portal. I didn't get too far down that rabbit hole with him, but I understand that. He told me that he wants to fight the system. And his quote was, the system might get me. I'll try and say it the way, I'll try and relay the quote with tone the way he said it to me. He goes, and the system might get me. The system may get me, but the system may not get me.
How about that?
That's what he said. I was like, well, Well, you're fighting the system right now. Rage against the machine. Tom Izzo. Well, maybe Tom Izzo. Maybe this is no longer the shaka. Maybe this is now for Tom Izzo.
I was thinking Tom Izzo's more like Public Enemy.
All the more. Exactly. So he's on the record. He's not retiring in 2024. Because this had been, I would say there was just some open speculation around the sport. Like, man, Tom, it's, you know, every other week he's given a quote here, quote there. Team's a little bit up and down. Like, could he just up and retire? So he had not really answered this directly on the record to my knowledge in recent months, if not years. He's sticking around. I think he'll be here at least a few more years. What was your takeaway from the story?
You would agree. I think Tom would agree. He is what people label a quote, old school coach, right?
Yes, sure.
Okay. So I completely understand how an old school coach would be frustrated by the dramatic changes in the sport, in the way that he is required to do his job. His job has changed dramatically, just like everybody else's has. And I can understand as you are, you know, at what we normally call retirement age in America, and after you've had so much success, to watch the sport just be flipped upside down by all of these things, I get how that would be frustrating. And I understand how there are certain situations that are exactly as Tom describes them, which is somebody runs into a little bit of adversity, and rather than fight through it, they say, I'm just getting out of here. I can transfer. I'm just going to go find a new home. The only thing I am resistant of or hesitant to go all the way with them on is that, and I know he didn't say this, I'm not putting words in his mouth, but the implication is that, like, players are transferring and this is a lot and this is not good for the sport. And whether it's good for the sport or not has never really been something I care about too much. I just care about, is it fair to the student athlete? I'm not saying you shouldn't ever consider whether something is good for the sport, but I'm more interested in, like, is it fair for the student athlete? And I don't think student athletes should have restrictions on them in that way, in the way that some coaches would like us to go back to. And I don't think every player who transfers is running from something. And again, I know Tom didn't say that, but you get that suggestion from coaches a lot. Like, if you're not getting the playing time you want, or you're not getting the number of shots per game you want, and you decide to transfer, then you're running from something. And I just don't think that's always true. Like, sometimes you're just looking for a better opportunity, something different. Like, every time you break up with somebody you're in a relationship with, are you running from something, or have you recognized perhaps that this isn't a good relationship for me? Like, every time somebody gets divorced, they're not running from something. Sometimes it's just like, hey, we thought this would be great. It's not. It's time to move on. Like, was Josh Pastner running from something as a coach when he left Memphis for Georgia Tech?
Maybe.
That's my point, right? But we don't know, oh my God, it's so shameful. It's like, yo, man, if you stay at Memphis, you're on the hot seat. Georgia Tech's willing to give you a brand new contract, and Memphis is willing to pay you to take it. Maybe it's time to – Shaka Smart, you know, he was at Texas. I don't know that the Marquette job is a better job than the Texas job. I do know this. When Shaka was at VCU, he was offered the Marquette job, didn't take it. And then he was offered the Texas job, and he did take it. So then why did he leave Texas for Marquette? Well, because things were getting difficult. Like, he just lost in the first round, and if you come back, you're on the hot seat, and if you have a bad year, you might be gone. Like, is he running from something, or is he just running to something better, something that feels like a better situation? Just in the sport, Bryce Hopkins went to Kentucky, couldn't play, left. Was he running for something, or was he just looking for something better? Went to Providence and became an All-American candidate. Joe Burrow went to Ohio State, sat on the bench, decided to transfer. Was he running from something, or did he just say, God, never, I don't want to keep watching. I want to go play. By the way, he signed a $275 million contract last September. So I just don't. And I know Tom didn't say this, but too often I hear from not just coaches, but fans too. Like, people transferring is like the worst thing in the world. And it's symbolic of issues facing the youth of America. And I just don't always buy that.
Yeah, I had a line in the story kind of linking Saban and Izzo's coaching philosophies and mantras, really lifestyle, to be honest, where something that is worth doing should be hard to achieve, essentially. Like, if it's not hard, then something's gone wrong. And Izzo particularly leans heavily into this notion. And so he likes players, obviously, that want to come play for him and have this mindset where, like, yeah, no, I'm going to have bad days. Like, it's going to be tough. There are going to be days where I might not even like myself because of how I performed in practice or in a game, et cetera, et cetera. And you know what? Then I'm going to say, I'm going to go back and I'm going to do it even better. It's going to make me a better person. I think Izzo just wishes that his worldview on this, which was way more common 15 years ago, not even getting into 30 years ago, was out there. And it's just not. And he said, I think I can adapt to it better than the kids most times, which is an interesting quote. It might be half accurate, half inaccurate, but the thing that he wrapped on, he actually talked about this and we got away from it. And then as we closed, he went back to it. And I put the quote in the story where I do believe Izzo has a genuine and concern. You could argue is the concern misplaced. I'm just telling you.
His heart. I want to be clear. His heart's in the right place.
His heart is in the right place. And he talked with me about this in July at the Peach Jam last year. And you know what? I think he talked about with me in the Peach Jam the year before and multiple times. And he's talked about it with so many people. He has genuine concern that there are going to be hundreds, if not thousands, of players that just wind up taking this crooked route through college. Do they graduate? Do they not graduate? They get to 22, 23, 25 years old, and they're kind of left standing there, and they're like, damn, did I make the right decision? Some will, some will not. That is life. You learn from your mistakes, et cetera. But it seems to weigh on him in a genuine way that I understand if you're a cynic when it comes to this stuff and it's like, oh, millionaire coaches. I'm just telling you, with Izzo, his heart is in the right place. And it is those issues that continue to gnaw at him. And it's almost like he refuses to give up on the profession and to give up on coaching because he wants to power through and hope that whenever he does retire, whether it's a year from now, 2, 3, 5 years from now, where his university is and where college athletics is in a better place. Like, he is a man almost pushing against a tidal wave at this point. And I find him to be, because of that, one of the more fascinating characters we have in all of sports.
Yeah. His heart is in the right place. Like, he does care genuinely and deeply about the sport of college basketball. And he has big ideas about how it should look and how it should work. I'm appreciative of all that. It's just often when I hear people say things under the umbrella of what you just said, I can always counter it by saying, yeah, that's not unique to basketball players. That's young people in general. Like, if your concern is that, man, basketball players are going to get into college, and then when things get hard, they might give up or go somewhere else. The young people, thousands of basketball players might do that. Millions of other people do that every year, you know. They struggle in school. They don't fight through adversity. They take a semester off to bartend or travel, go start a band in California. It's the same thing I used to hear all the time with the NBA draft. Like, well, the reason you don't want high school players entering the NBA draft straight out of high school is because, you know, some of them are going to make bad decisions. Okay, sure. Some high school graduates are going to make bad decisions. That's America. That's the world. Like, I'm more interested in allowing them the right to make whatever decision they want to make than I am in restricting those decisions. I'll let other people's parents worry about those people, and I'll let those people make their decisions the same way when I was young, I was able to make mine. It's just all of this stuff. I get it. I get where it comes from. I just, I don't think it's as big of an issue as some other people seem to think.
Parrish has got to get out of here in just a minute. So quick heads up, TV guide for you, what to watch for Wednesday night here. Best game of the night, Creighton, 18th ranked at UConn. That'll be a pretty big time one right there. Mississippi State plays at number 8, Kentucky. You've got Texas Tech, 25th in the rankings, at number 5, Houston. Very fascinated with that game. See what Houston can do to rebound after a couple of road losses. Meanwhile, Texas Tech, as mentioned earlier, yet to lose on the road. If Grant McCaslin's team were to beat Houston, that may well have to lead our Friday show. USC plays at number 12, Arizona. Feels like a get-right game for the Wildcats. We'll see what the Pac-12 has to offer up. And then Nevada at San Diego State is yet another must-see Mountain West matchup. So those are some of your best ones on Wednesday night. And then on Thursday night, We've got 14th ranked Illinois at Michigan. Was nice to see the Fab Five reconvening on Monday for the first time ever at a Michigan home game since they all played together at Michigan. That was pretty awesome to see. We'll see if Michigan, obviously not having a good season, can capitalize on some good mojo there. Minnesota plays at Michigan State, and then Oregon plays at Colorado on Thursday. That's actually a halfway decent Pac-12 matchup there. Oregon gets to lose in Pac-12 league play. Colorado has, it seemingly has, an NCAA tournament future. So that's your Wednesday and Thursday night in college hoops.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. and Teagle, legend. Shouts to Huck Larnell. Thank you guys once again for watching, listening to the Eye On College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple, Spotify. More of us than there are of them. That should be reflected in the comments. So do that, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
Hey, everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. men's national team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast. And I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me. And also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Vuori gear is designed to look great in everyday life while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the men's Sunday performance jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.